welcome to the Soccer Coaching Podcast, brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly, reflecting our shared ambition to help coaches have the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. We hope you enjoyed this episode and thanks for listening. Ray, Phil, good morning. How are we both?
Very well, thank you.
Good, thanks.
This is a challenge and a treat because usually I've got it easy with me and just one guest to talk to. But we're stretching certainly my powers of ability to host the podcast. And Ray, you're going to, if it's okay, mate, you're going to co-host today. Does that sound okay?
Yeah, it sounds great. Look, I'm looking forward to it. Obviously, I've done stuff with Phil before. I've done stuff with you before. So hopefully that bodes well for all of us.
So you've had enough of the podcast, your own episodes. We're making you share it out with love with a real different guest this time. So
it's all good stuff, to be fair.
But we'll introduce nicely to Phil then. So Phil, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, and it has been quite nice. You've been really kind enough to free up some time pretty quick for us to talk about a topic that I'm definitely well interested in, and I know Ray is too. But for those that don't know you or your journey, if you don't mind, just introduce yourself and tell us a bit about who you are and what you do.
Yeah, no, thanks very much for having me on. So I've been coaching for about 20 years now. Started very young, started as a 16-year-old, coaching in schools, coaching local clubs in South London. So that kind of took me through a variety of different paths. So I was with Crystal Palace's community project. I was then lucky enough to go with their academy, the pre-academy, doing a number of different roles, coaching, video analysis. Went over I went to university as well in South Wales, which is part of my degree. I was lucky enough to be chosen to work with Cardiff City's academy too. So from a young age, I got straight into the academy vibe, the environment. I then went over to the US and did a number of camps over there, and I was coaching a few teams, you know, mostly spending my time on the East Coast, but then in the summers flying over to Seattle as well. And then when I came back, went back with Crystal Palace, and then I kind of had a realization I loved coaching, but as I was there standing on a hill with sideways rain hitting me in South London and soggy socks, and I thought this would be the greatest job in the world if I could do it in the sunshine. I also wanted to continue my education as well. So I went to Madrid. So then Real Madrid, I've got a school there. So I did my master's with the Real Madrid University. And then I was desperate to stay in Spain. So I sent out hundreds of emails. Luckily, one guy got back to me and said, well, we're going to try this international academy in Alicante, Spain. You know, we'll try it for 3 months or so. Went over there. I'm still working with them now, 8 years later. So I've gone through the coaching route, and I'm now predominantly a youth coach and a mindset coach. So mindset coaching with youth teams, but individually more with senior players. That's where we are now, still in Spain. Coaching kids and working with Alicante City's senior club as a mindset coach and mentor.
So can I ask you, Phil, before we get into the detail on the mindset stuff in particular, I assume you're fluent in Spanish. But I also assume it's a second language. Am I right in saying that? And as a consequence, how do you find teaching something as potentially complex as mindset in a second language or with that sort of language gap?
Fluent depending who you speak to. My coaching in Spanish is probably better than my conversational Spanish. But with the mindset coaching, I predominantly work with English speakers, and the youth coaching, one of the teams I coach is in Spanish. So yeah, see, at first it was a real challenge, real struggle. I was coaching for quite a few years, and then suddenly you get put into an environment where something that comes out so naturally, you're having to think about in the moment. And obviously, that thought process in Spanish at first would take an extra second, an extra few seconds, but then the pictures totally change. You know, you freeze the moment. But then, yeah, the picture's just taken a few. It shows you how quick football is, how quickly it changes, and how important that feedback segment is.
Good.
Yeah, absolutely. But wait, just as an introduction for you on the podcast, if that's okay, like how did you and Phil get together and how did you get to know one another and what's the background there before we get into the actual detail of the episode? Just it'd be good to know how your relationship kind of came about.
quite straightforward really, because a mutual friend of ours sent me on his book, and there's something about some books. They say never judge a book by its cover, but we all do, and there was something quite appealing visually about it. I can't really explain it. And we reached out. It's what I end up doing, and probably you end up doing with a lot of your guests as well, is you chew things over about their particular niche and what their expertise is. And then normally the next step from my side of it is we do a webinar together. And I say we do it together. It's kind of 90%, 10%. And yeah, and that then extended on to we stayed in touch probably about a year ago now, Phil, was it, when we did that? And we've put together something longer, something a bit more robust. So Phil, starting this weekend, is doing a short course, which is kind of a month long, four lesson course around working mindset wise with Gen Z and Gen Alpha players, which is really unusual for coaching people, I guess. But I would suggest if anyone enjoys this today, they'll definitely enjoy that, and just looking at coaching from a different angle, I would say. So yeah, we've kind of become that over the last year and a half.
Awesome. Thanks, Ray. And well, Phil, look, let's get into the actual substance. But what I've got to ask you one. Well, first of all, congratulations on being smart enough as a coach to work out, go and do it somewhere hot, because it could take a lot of us 10 years plus to realize that it's what we're still doing in the rain in England. Let's go somewhere where it's sunny. So well done. But also, 16's very young to get into coaching, right? Brilliant. But, well, was it young? I mean, what was the 16? How come so young, so early? Did you kind of think, actually, I really enjoy this. I want to give this a go.
Yeah, great question. I guess football's just always been my thing. You know, I was always playing, and I was one of those kids. Oh, what do you want to be when you're older? I want to be a footballer. And I guess, you know, yeah, but okay, you got to get something in now, you know, so you get some payments in. Yeah. So I thought, okay, next best thing, right, let's go into coaching. And then it kind of overtook probably around the age of 22. I was coaching a lot. I was playing at a half decent level, but it was starting to coincide. So it was okay. Coach my teams. The teams I'm coaching on the weekend are playing the same days that I'm playing. So I had to sacrifice something. I thought, well, my coaching is going to get me a lot further than my football is. I don't think I really had the level to make it at a professional level. So yeah, that was it really. Football was just the thing that I knew, the thing, my vocation. So it ended, I'll say the next best thing, but it's probably doing an understatement. It's something that I ended up being, I'm not sure obsessed is the healthy way to put it, but yeah,
Yeah.
that.
Yeah. No, brilliant. Fantastic. Okay. Well, look, I guess we're going to talk a lot about, I'm imagining, among other things, Gen Z and Gen Alpha. Is that going to come up in the conversation? I'm sure it is, isn't it, Phil? It might just be worth, if you don't mind, just explaining kind of, what Gen Z and what Gen Alpha is and, maybe what kind of age range they kind of feed into.
So I imagine everyone's heard of Gen Z and so forth. Gen Z, obviously, there's no fixed age, but they say roughly around from those born 1995 to around 2015, so around that kind of age. And then Gen Alpha is the next generation coming through, so probably around now from 0 to 5, 10. Again, there's no set age, but yeah, so if we're working with players, it's anything up to around the late 20s will be Gen Z, and then naught to the t early teens will be Gen Alpha.
Oh, perfect. Well, I think that's a good reference point for us.
Yeah, so those of us involved, Phil, those of us involved then in youth coaching, we're either coaching one or the other, right? Probably Gen Z, just by the sort of weight of numbers in it. And it always intrigued me, and I think you've kind of dismissed it there. There's no kind of fixed line, is there, between one generation and the next? It's far more blurred than that, and it's a bit more of a loose bracket. But there's obviously enough that connects kids, I guess, in the Western world that are born in within these brackets, that they kind of share some. Are they personality traits? Is it just something they absorb from society? I know we have a obviously a tech thing that's happened within those generations as well. What is it that that connects everyone in a Gen Z or in a Gen Alpha?
Yeah, it tends to be the environment. I mean, we spoke about it on the short course as well, Ray, that every generation thinks the next generation is going to ruin the world. And we showed even from the 399 BC that the Greek philosophers were talking about, the next generation this, the next generation that. So it's important for us as coaches not to think they're a lost cause. If we treat them like a lost cause, if we see them as a lost cause, we're going to treat them like a lost cause. And that takes away a lot of our coaching. And I think a lot of the time as coaches, we use that a bit as an excuse. When they're not understanding something, oh, it's because this generation, that this year. We all have it. But it tends to be the environment. So every generation has their issues. And we've just got to work around, we've got to see how can we get the best out of each generation. So obviously the generation Gen Z and Gen Alpha, their main issues is that the first generations to grow up with smartphones and social media. And the statistics and the research is very clear about this. If anyone gets a chance to read The Anxiety Generation by Jonathan Haidt, he's got a lot of graphs in there which show since the arrival of smartphones, anxiety, depression has increased. Time spent outside with friends has decreased. So how can we use, and we're in a very unique position as coaches where they might be outdoors, they're spending time with friends in a different environment away from school, exercising. So we're in a unique environment where we can bring a lot out of it. It's one of the few times during the week where they're not with their phones or social media. So I think we're in a really good position to help this next generation become more resilient, become happier, become more successful.
So it always, I guess, if I was to find a last line for this conversation, it would be something like it's important for coaches to understand them and move them from where they are rather than think that we're right and turn these kids into a mini version of us, if that makes sense. So our time hasn't gone, but our time in that environment where we're being shaped through childhood, that's done. Whether we climb trees or whether we sat on our phones, it doesn't really matter, does it? It's up to us to guide them from where they are.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, if you've been coaching for a while, you'll see a difference in this generation. And it's very easy to coach the way you started in a way. See, you get to a certain level in coaching. At the beginning, obviously, you're learning everything, you're taking everything in. But we've got to adapt as well. It's the old phrase, be agile or be fragile. And I think if we're not agile as coaches, we are going to get left behind. And you see it in the top level as well. I think that's probably why Alex Ferguson was so successful, because he was constantly adapting his tactics, his style of play, the way he treated each individual. And you see other coaches who they have a moment, but then the game passes them by because they try and do the same thing that they would do, that what was working from that beginning they believe that it's going to keep working for them. But we've got to be agile in our thinking.
Interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, I think we teed it up quite nicely now to get in some of the actual nitty-gritty behind this, Phil. So no pressure. Obviously, you've got the book to lead on as well, so feel free to do as much as you want to. But I'm just trying to put myself in a position as a coach, but also the people that listen that a lot of these grassroots coaches. And I think you're spot on. Like, I'm 50, so certainly when I was young and learning football. It was a different time, and we were a different breed, I guess, in many ways, because we love being outside. There wasn't much to do indoors, and it was a very sociable thing. And if you weren't out playing with your mates, you probably weren't seeing your mates. So, and it is different now, isn't it? So I'm trying to think first, before we get into like how coach might do this, what are some of the characteristics that it's good to be aware of as a coach, if you're coaching these players that are Gen Z or Gen Alpha, that we probably didn't have that environmental experience when we were kids. So what should we be aware of? And before we talk about how that might impact our coaching and things we might do, but just what kind of things should we be kind of mindful about, the fact that these are different generations to probably what we grew up in, especially the older people like me.
Yeah, no, and it's that was very, they say play is the work of children. And growing up and just climbing trees, getting hurt, falling out with people, it's all part of it, even the whole jumpers for goalpost street football kind of thing, you argue, was that a goal, was that not a goal? But these things help our players in the future with conflict resolution, and again, letting them get hurt, not wrapping them around in cotton wool. Obviously, yes, there's a safety element. However, if they bump their knee, it's not the end of the world. Let them do that. Let them having a bit of risk, something with real risk as well, is important for their development. I think as coaches, what we can do with that is. Being structured is important, but so is unstructured practice. The times where, so for example, the way we do this with in our coaching sessions is as an arrival activity, when they first get there before the session starts, they just get one ball. And yes, again, it's not about this or I think we need to get away from black and white thinking of. Okay, everything has to be with a ball. Everything has to be game realistic. Well, sometimes yes, sometimes no. So even though we want them all to get lots of touches, we give them one ball to begin with. There might be 10 players there, 12, 20. Okay, you've got one ball. What are you going to do with that one ball? Okay, we're kind of half recreating street football. You guys, if you want to do a match. Organize yourselves. Organize yourselves into two teams. It doesn't matter if it's a five-a-side pitch. Go 10v10 if you want. You haven't got any bibs yet, but you listen to the players that have been very successful and have gone through street football. They would say the same thing. Oh yeah, we're 20v20. We're different age groups. But again, they've got to organize themselves. They've got to, again, conflict resolution. No, I want him on my team. No, I want him on my team. So it's kind of also negotiation skills as well. These are all vital for life. But if we do it all for them, how are they supposed to develop it? So I think we have to give them a bit of, I think we're very good at structured sessions nowadays, but I think we could probably add in a bit more unstructured.
Do you cover this around any of the stuff that you talk about on? Obviously, you spend a lot of time doing coach development, and you do some great content and some great topics and themes. But how to coach a structured session unstructured, like, is kind of the topic. And how do you create chaos? And also recognizing the fact that if you're going to do that with a generation of kids that maybe aren't used to playing that space, we grew up being unstructured, didn't we? Our lifestyles were very unstructured, I think, to be fair, where everything these days is organized for kids, isn't it? Everything has got parent eyes on them, it's all organized. How do we do that? And is it something that you've come across in your topics that you work with coaches about approaching, sessions that way?
I have a recent, well, in about a week, I'll publish an ebook called Advanced Coaching Concepts. It's the second volume, and one of the it's kind of structured in that it's quite a concise book, but it gives you light bulb moments throughout. And one of the things I put forward is that it's not street football if it is structured, you know. So if you give out a little bit like what Phil's saying, that there's a sweet spot there somewhere. But if you give out bibs and you put the goals out and you find the pitch, then it's not street football. Not be necessarily because of the football side, but some of the stuff Phil talks about, that idea of, well, the teams are unfair, you know, it's 6-0 when we're 5 versus 5, so let's just go 6 versus 4, or we'll swap him and him, or her and her, and do all that. So the more adult fingerprints that are on it, I feel the less organic that street football is, and the less you're still going to get the, oh, it's 6-0, coach, what are we going to do? You know, and I think probably what Phil is describing there is this idea where you're putting something unstructured within your structure is probably our happy medium. Unless we go as far, I mean, I know academies that have set up sessions in the car park, you know, that just bring the bag of balls out and just, you know, square off some of their car park for kids to play in, and they fall over and they hurt themselves and all that sort of stuff. But it's still us in control of it, you know. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to just grasp on things that are certainly in the UK, in the US, and most of Europe, that kind of street football outside the cages in certain pockets of certain cities, it's quite done. And it's sad to see, but one of the things I wanted to ask Phil was about, we spend our time bemoaning street football. We've done that for 20 years probably now. We spend our time moaning about kids spending too much time inside. We can't understand why, you know, there's this thing now where parents are grounding kids outside. Like, you don't get sent to your room, you get sent outside.
Yeah,
And that's a
literally.
thing now. And you have kids, a generation of kids that will go, "Would you were punished by being allowed to just stay in," and then they can't. And but that's literally a sign of the times. Like, what, there must be some positive things that we can attach to these generations of young people, as well as kind of bemoaning this, and we're trying to make up for that. What do you think about that, Phil?
Yeah, so you mean like the characteristics of the Gen Z Gen Alphas or?
Yeah, I'm just wondering, like, if my parents were to criticize my generation, would be, you watch too much TV, you know what I mean? The games consoles are taking over, and movies make you know, bad intentioned and all that sort of stuff. But in the fullness of time, we now say, well, we were outside, we were climbing trees, we were on our bikes, we were getting hurt, we were, you know, resolving conflict in the way we did things. What positive traits could we hang on to? What did they have an edge on, maybe, that we don't, or we didn't?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. And they obviously, I think probably emotional intelligence. They're open to being more vulnerable, but also they have everything at their fingertips. Okay, that can be a negative as well. But they want to see how a centre back plays positionally. They've probably got thousands of videos on YouTube. They want to see how to do a certain skill. They can watch it, rewind it, watch it. Think about how did we do that? We couldn't really do that. We'd have to go and buy a VHS and then maybe rewind it and hopefully it doesn't unwind. But yeah, I think from an educational point of view, they've got a fantastic edge. I think coaches as well now. See, we've got podcasts, we've got videos, we've got courses. It's so much more attainable now for both players and coaches.
I wonder, do you think we could use things like, whatever. I assume most youth coaches now have a parents' WhatsApp group, or a parents' Facebook Messenger group, or whatever it is, to communicate details. Something I've done in the past quite a lot is putting clips or little analysis things or little tasks or something like that, and kind of beefing up a training program, even though you don't have eyes on it. They'd respond as a generation, they'd respond quite well to snappy, short sort of things like that, no?
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think you get a lot of youth teams now who've got VOs and you can watch the games back and watch the highlights and using that as a tool. And you've seen a lot of pro clubs now. They've got those big TVs on the training field, so they've got that instant feedback loop. So yeah, it's using those to our advantage and making sure it's not the only tool, but part of it. That's if that's how they're also used to learning, we could probably accelerate it. We could probably accelerate their learning habits in that moment where, okay, you're getting instant feedback. Here's the proof. There's no arguing about it. There's an, no, but I did that. And the coach saying, no, I saw it a different way. Okay, you've got it there. So we are in a uniquely advantageous position where we can speed up and accelerate that learning.
Yeah, good.
So Phil, obviously doing, writing the book, and looking at this, obviously it's a passion of yours as well, and looking in more details. I know it's around mindset more broadly than it is just about specifics like in alien generations. But what would you say then were some of the things that as a coach we need to be aware of that will come potentially? I know it gets a generalization, not every kid is the same, but just generally speaking, if you're going to take 30 kids from a certain age group, then these are some of the catches to be aware of. And then once you're aware of them, what kind of things could we do to kind of mitigate that or to maximize it, to make it into a super strength rather than an issue? And you've mentioned conflict quite a few times, and I think that's quite an interesting one because I think kids really struggle these days to deal with conflict because they don't fall out in the playground anymore. The playground used to be a safe space at school where you could have a little argument and a row, but it was all sorted out there and then, and the teachers didn't really get involved. And you can't do that anymore. So where do you learn to do these things? And, obviously sport's competitive and football's physical and contact. But that's just one example. But I'm thinking, okay, what should we be aware of as coaches that potentially could be related to, the generation that we're coaching, and what kind of things might we want to think about doing to help us make that, into a benefit and add to their football journey rather than be a problem for us and for them.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point with the conflict. And another reason why they struggle with conflict is online. If you don't like what someone said, what do? You mute them, you delete them, you block them. So you just get into a bit of an echo chamber. You only hear the things that support your belief as opposed to challenging that belief. So ways we've done this. So I work here. I also coach in schools. We have something called a conflict corner. So first of all, we teach them, okay, when if you're having a conflict, instead of just coming to coach for him to sort it out for you, go and sort out your conflict, go to this corner. When you sort it out, you can come back in. So again, you're not kicking them out. You're okay, this is the area to sort out your conflict, and then you choose when you come back in. And then we also give them some guidelines. Okay, so when this person's speaking, listen, and don't just listen. For the and be waiting to respond, as in, okay, whilst he's speaking, I'm going to ignore what he's saying because
Get
I'm
my
thinking
defense
about
ready.
exactly that. So
But you're saying let them solve
listening,
it, right? You're saying give them a space to
exactly.
solve it. Don't always be, because sorry to jump in with you, but I'm thinking we have some wonderful coaches out there that have the best intentions, but I know what it would be like. And it was probably me 10 years ago where two kids have a little bang, they get up, there's a little bit of push, nothing. I mean, these are the kids, but they're a little push shoving, and I'm jumping straight in there and calming everyone down and getting to shake hands and blah, 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 and do that. Where maybe I'm better off just leaving them for a minute or two, or just, reminding about behaviors more generally that we want to do the right things. But do we want to rush to get in because we want, should we be giving that space to solve problems themselves a little bit?
Yeah, obviously making sure it's safe, but yeah, absolutely. I think if we send them, if we have this conflict corner, they got that space and they kind of like, okay, when I'm in here, these are the guidelines. So we're not giving them the answer, we're just giving them the environment. And cause how annoying is that as a coach? You're trying to coach and oh, he did this, she said that, and it's just an it's no good for anyone. It's not good for them because if we sort out for them, it's not good for us because then we're spending time with these two players when the rest of them are waiting. So And it's quite interesting. They get to a point where, because they just want to play football, once they're in the conflict corner, they don't stay there. They get to a situation where they don't stay there long. Or they think, okay, you know what? It's not worth it. Like, shake hands, let's carry on going.
Is there a difference between girls and boys with that sort of conflict resolution? And I don't know. Again, we will be generalizing, of course, but is there a different response, a different kind of set of circumstances for girls and boys?
Yeah, I think probably more the teenage years, because they do react differently. They go through, obviously, their hormonal times are different too. But I think younger kids, there's a slight difference maybe, but not enough to talk about. But yeah, the older kids, you might see it where boys, it tends to be more of a status thing, where girls, it's your if you leave me out, you're making me go crazy here, and you're really getting me angry, you're triggering me because you're leaving me out of the group. Whereas the boys, it's kind of, okay, who can be the alpha? Again, it's a very much a generalization, but yeah, in a conflict corner, I might not do it so much with that kind of age group either. They might find it a bit demeaning. I'd probably do it up to the age of 12, 13. But yeah, there are differences, and we have to be aware. Okay, how do we? I can't remember which coach it was. It's an American coach, and you're saying you with girls you lead them, with boys you drive them. The girls kind of all want to be, okay, let's all do this together. The boys, if there's that one player that's particularly good, I think, well, he's helping the team anyway. It doesn't matter if I like him or dislike him, he's helping the team.
More individual.
Yeah, individual, but it's more of a maybe more of an ego to say that, okay, we've won.
Well, I think we spoke around obviously the Gen Z and the Gen Alpha stuff, but then more broadly then, just talking about mental mastery, mindset just broadly, okay. It's something you're very passionate about, something you've obviously spent a lot of time looking into. So I guess my first question would be, where does that passion come from, and why is that important? Because obviously in football you can pick lots of things to focus on, and most people lead to all technical, tactical stuff. But you've obviously gone to a space that's not as common, although it's become a bigger thing. And then maybe if you don't mind telling us in your view, kind of what that actually represents. When we talk about mental mastery, especially for youth footballers, what is that? So where does it come from first, and what does it mean to you?
Yeah, I think probably my own experiences. It used to be something kind of struggled with as a player, very much a confidence player, and it used to frustrate me. So I think that sparked a curiosity. Okay, one, why am I feeling confident one day, and then the next day I don't feel confident, and why is that making me feel lethargic, and why is that making me feel more energetic? So I think that sparked the curiosity. There was a point I was playing probably the best level I'd played at the time, on the Saturday. And then on the Sunday, I was playing 11 a side also, but with my cousins and friends, just a Sunday league team. And even though the Saturday game would come first, I'd feel so much more lethargic than when it came on to a Sunday, the day after. So I'd play 90 minutes on the Saturday, and wouldn't feel myself, would feel anxious, would feel nauseous, muscles feel tight. And then the day after, even though I'd played in 90 minutes the day before, I'd feel fresh because it was just a bit of fun just playing with my cousins and friends. So I think that sparked that curiosity on the psychological side. And a year later, when I went to university in Wales, and we learned about, okay, how anxiety can cause muscle tension and so forth, they kind of had that light bulb moment. Okay, I wish I knew that a year ago. So yeah, I think a lot of coaches go through that as well. If coaches who didn't become a pro, who didn't play pro, a lot of them would go through that curiosity. Okay, why didn't I become a pro? I think that's where a lot of our coaching passion comes from as well, because we're constantly having that curiosity. Why?
Fantastic. Okay, and then so tell us if you can, like maybe going back to the book here a little bit, what is mental mastery? What like how would you define it, and what do you speak about in the book that kind of covers that? And if it's okay after that, then Phil, then Ray, if you don't mind, I'd be keen to know like obviously comes from the psych section, I guess, from like the four corner model from the FAs. But how much time do you spend talking to coaches about this stuff? And does that include the things that Phil's going to mention now? Almost it seems to suit those nice together from kind of Phil's side of things, but also from a coach development point of view first. But Phil, if you don't mind, just explain a bit more about what mental mastery is and how you cover it in the book first, if that's okay.
Yeah, so a lot of it comes down to character skills. So things that they can take into life as well. Sport is so powerful for that because we're constantly having setbacks. You know, how do you deal with those setbacks? How do you set goals? So all of these are life skills. So a lot of the mental mastery revolves around resilience for me. How do we build resilience? And resilience leads to confidence. And you see, you spoke about the four corner model there. If you can get the psychological side of it in, you think about a player who's confident physically, they're starting to run faster, jump higher, stronger, and shoulder to shoulder. Tactically, their focus is higher. Technically, it's a lot more sound when they're confident. So for me, that psychological edge impacts all the others. We teach them, okay, pressure and stress can be good. Where instead of just hiding away from that and taking away all the pressure, well, the higher they go, the more pressure they're going to have. They're going to have potentially thousands of fans shouting at them. And obviously, a very unique situation now. They're going to have social media who might be having to go at them after a loss. So we do a lot of pressure training with them. And in this pressure training, we teach them how to deal with. We give them tools how to deal with that pressure and letting them know, okay, if you're feeling pressure, even though it doesn't feel good to you, it doesn't mean it's not good for you. So embracing that pressure, seeing it as a challenge, even okay, when you're feeling like your emotions have gone over the edge, how to use a quick breathing technique that we can do in the game. And you can do this. Breathing is a great one because you can do that with any age. They understand it. Just slowing down your breath, or in certain situations, speeding it up. But I think this is just good tools for life. They might go after football, they might go into an interview. They can use those same techniques. They might be doing a talk in front of thousands. They can use that same technique. So for me, it's just about giving them tools for life, but just using football as the platform.
Love it. Brilliant. And
Yeah, I
Ray.
mean, yeah, like thinking about your question, I think sometimes we get, you talk about the four corner model, and I talk about it as well because it's kind of, we all understand it. We all,
You're brainwashed with
yeah,
it.
maybe, but I think what we, when you think about it as four separate things, it's kind of a little bit flawed when actually it all just bleeds and blends together, So, psychology doesn't start and end at any point. You know what I mean? Like everything, like Phil said, a tactic. Like if you're a striker and you're through on goal, your technique will be affected by your mood or your mindset or your confidence and all that sort of stuff. So it doesn't it, to work. I don't believe that working psychologically with players needs to be. What some people think that the kids, a player needs to be lying on a sofa and getting everything off their chest or anything like that. Remember, Dan Abrahams did a webinar for us quite a few years ago now, and Dan Abrahams spoke about the 2 minutes at the end. Like that 2 minutes at the end could be a little way for you as a coach. That might just have the kids for an hour or a couple of sessions a week. You don't have a lot of time to be dynamic with stuff, but using that 2 minutes at the end to do something psychological, and we're not talking about needing a psych degree to do it, but asking kids out of 10, how do you think your whatever your concentration was tonight? And if a kid says five, then probing why concentration was a five, and just having those little light conversations, but regularly. I think it's so important. I remember, I'm going back. I'm not sure exactly how long, and I don't want to put a number of years on it because people might guess what club I was at. But I was at a club that was struggling with relegation out of the in the Football League, and I presented myself to the I knew the manager and the assistant manager, and I said to them, look, they'd had a really poor result on the Saturday. It was getting very, very, very tricky. And I said, look, I've got something, I've got an exercise that we do. You know, if you'll have me, give me 30 minutes, 40 minutes with the players, and we can do something. And it might give you a 1% that might just get you over the line somehow. And the assistant manager came back to me the next day, and he said, he doesn't believe in psychology. And Phil smiling there, because you're like, what do you mean you don't believe in that? I didn't challenge it at the time, but because it just wasn't the kind of the hierarchy of it. But I thought to myself, and even in his interviews after games, before games, he would talk about work ethic, he would talk about confidence, he would talk about, you know, carrying the result from the previous week. And it's just, I guess, breaking down that barrier that people have around what is psychology and where it starts and ends, I think is massive.
I think it's knowledge, it's understanding, isn't it? You know, and sometimes I guess the science behind it has probably alienated people as well, right? Because it seems to be more theoretical when it, you know, there's no reason why it should be. It's as practical as it is kicking the ball, isn't it? You know, so because it's you on a pitch. But I guess, you know, part of the challenge is, and maybe that's, you know, the work with the book there, Phil, is, you know, breaking down some of these myths and getting a feel for it so actually we can understand, you know, what actually it's about in real terms and then how we can impact on it. And on that one, you mentioned a few things there, about, you know, I love the fact, you know, dealing with pressure and stress, because I think as a parent and as a coach, you're always conscious about trying to, you know, not put the kids under too much pressure, but also recognizing that, you know, it's a competitive sport. And if you're looking after a, you know, a team that may be, in inverted commas, winning stuff, you know, then cup finals and league titles, that, you know, even under 12s, 13s, you know, it suddenly becomes more serious than it definitely should be, but it does become that. How do you do it? What practical things, is it theory based? Is it classroom stuff? Or is there practical things you do or you would suggest doing with your groups that can practice some of these things? You know, is it built into sessions and part of playing games, or is it, you know, theory based things? Just bring some of that to life if you can for us. And then again, Ray, I think, how does that dovetail into what you do with coaches, you know, in how you cover some of this material? It'd be good to know from both sides again, if that's all right.
Just to touch on what Ray was saying there as well, and there's also Dan Abraham's special, where, because I think when people think of sports psychology or psychology, I think, like you said, someone lying down on the sofa talking about the feelings. No, it's not that. It's I think a simple one that Dan Abraham's had was, and it's amazing the difference. I challenge any coach to do it in their sessions. It's like, okay, if you're doing something passing related or possession, okay, show me what a confident pass looks like. And see how they adapt straight away. They know what a confidence part, but they start acting confidently. So yeah, the pressure training is something I particularly enjoy doing. And like you said, we want to protect them, and there's a time for that, right? It's a stretch and support. So stretch them, so put the pressure on, and then support them. So I think a lot of coaches, we kind of on one side or the other, okay, always stress them, stretch them by stressing them out, but never teaching them how to deal with that stress. Or on the other side, supporting them and then never putting any stretch on it, never stressing them out. And then see, like you said, they get to these cup finals and they crumble because they don't know how to deal with it. And I was very much in that camp before. I would only support them. I never wanted them to have any stress. But now I've adding that into my coaching toolbox has really helped me. So the way we do it, you can do it in a classroom. So you actually did it with a professional club here that last year they were visiting Alicante. They had a pre-season training, and I did this pressure training with them. So the first bit was that we had a presentation. Okay, this is what stress and pressure is. When you do it, these are some tools you can use. And I said, okay, we're going to go onto the pitch now, and we're going to purposely stress you out. But it's a perfect moment for you to. For you to work on these tools that you have. So one simple way is a 2 minute no mistakes. So obviously we encourage most of our sessions we encourage mistakes. So the conversation I have with my players, and again you don't have to do you can just do this without the presentation beforehand, of course, just do it on the pitch. So the way we put it to the players is, okay, usually we want you to make mistakes because that helps you become better players. Today, we're going to punish mistakes because that's also going to help you become a better player. So it's a simple thing. It's just close drill with passing, dribbling, and finishing into an empty net. But any mistakes, we start the timer again. So the aim is to go 2 minutes with no mistakes. So bear in mind, this was an under-18s professional club. And I'm like, well, I'm going to finish all the shots into an empty goal. All right, let's see how you do. And these top quality players are missing open goals because of the stress of, okay, if I miss, everyone's going to have a go at me now because the 2 minutes is going to start again. But that's where we're coaching during this 2 minutes. Okay. Anytime you're stopping, again, just like in the game, anytime you're stopping, okay, just bring yourself back into the moment. Use one of these tools that you've learned. If you're just doing it straight off of the session with no presentation, you might just say, okay, just focus on your breathing. Anytime you've got a rest, if you feel the stress is getting to you, just focus on your breathing or 3 breaths. So yeah, that's the one way to do it. So you're adding consequences. Another way could be we do a three-team tournament. So they're playing a match. It's winner stays on, one golden off. So again, there's that pressure. But we also say, okay, the team that finishes last, I'm not a massive one on physical punishments, but just for the sake of this pressure is the consequence. They've got to run a lap. Well, they've got to keep running. And then you've got one player who's trying to hit the crossbar. And they've got to keep running until he hits the crossbar. So he's got the stress and pressure. If he doesn't make it after two shots, he goes back in line, someone else comes in. So just
Love
little
it.
ways. Again, it's not
Yeah.
something you're going to do every week, but
But Phil,
every
these
now
are
and
great
then.
examples. So I think, like, because I want to come to maybe that's Ken in second row. But these are great examples of relatively small practical things you can do that create the a realistic pressure, but in a safe space, I guess, as well, right? So we've got to get that balance right. You'll develop in or working on a particular attribute that a player's going to need, right? To maximize their own things, and they're great examples. Because I think even I would struggle to think of good ideas to do, but just those two examples you gave there are fantastic, and it's good practical ways. I think give me a classroom, in an hour with the kids in a room, I'll bore them stupid, but I'll cover all the stuff I want to cover. But they wanted to go and do stuff, don't they? Someone picked that out, but they want to get and actually do things. So, but Phil, two great examples. So, what would you make of that? And also, like, how do you approach this with part of your CPD stuff that you do with the coaches?
The whole thing of classroom versus the pitch is a really interesting one because you can, like you said, you can cover a lot of ground with some players in a classroom, but it's never going to feel quite
Absolutely.
as poignant as when there's pressure on the grass. I read somewhere that even a little bit coaching under a little bit of pressure, they always say in penalty shootouts, you can't replicate it, don't they? You can't replicate the environment, you can't replicate the pressure, all that sort of stuff. But I'm not sure a training ground can ever do that for any part of most games. But the point being made, and I can't reference it here right now, but was that even little bits of stress, little bits of pressure do help when you fast forward to those actual pressure situations. The three-team game Phil spoke about, I love, and that came to my mind straight away as he was talking, that one goal and off. And we used to actually add little secondary things where we would tell them, kind of like every pass matters, every tackle matters, every recovery run matters, that chance you get matters, putting it in and finishing it, following things in off the goalkeeper matters, not just one out of two, doing it two out of two, because that chance might not come around again. We did, and this is when we have loads of time. So I don't want a grassroots coach with an hour with the kids going out and doing a penalty shootout with them. But before cup competitions, in our academy environments where we had more time and probably more extra time to do stuff like that, we'd put them in two teams. We'd give the winner a prize and make them walk from the halfway line and all that sort of stuff, just to it doesn't move the dial to 100 that they'll feel on match day. But it moves it enough to stretch them. And finally, for me on that, I remember asking Per Mertesacker, who was he's just either finished or finishing as Arsenal's academy manager, and their mantra was always about creating the most challenging and the most caring academy in the world. And I asked him about that kind of. It's kind of like holding two opposite ideas in your hands at the same time. This idea of in football, we always thought challenge was been really tough on people. Coaches that were strict, that were sniping at players, that would sub them if they made a mistake, that kind of intolerant part. And then on the other hand, they were talking about the caring part, which doesn't sit well with many coaches either, where if you're too soft or you're too whatever. So that balance in between, where, like Phil spoke about, that stretch and challenge or that care and challenge, and finding a sweet spot between putting them under pressure, but you use the word say having a safe space to do it, allowing them to do that. And I think that's probably different for every player. It's probably different for every age group, every culture. But, if we're just going to solve the problems, if we're just going to take all the problems away, and then you could probably talk about this on a parenting podcast. It's not going to help them in the longer run. It might help them in the moment, but in the longer run, I think those pinch points of stress and challenge are important.
Well, I think it would be wrong not to also touch on this one, Phil. And I don't know how much you cover this in the book or how much you've looked around this as part of, the whole mindset approach, but I think one thing that's evident over recent years is more young people are being diagnosed with inadvertent mental conditions, ADHD, autism, whatever it might be. And that, whether we're just better at recognizing it or whether that's part of the environments we create now for kids where it's more anxious. And we may well have kids in our coaching. I always ask the questions, but you don't always necessarily, parents don't always tell that or they don't know themselves yet whether the kids have been officially diagnosed or something. How much of that is something we need to consider, and how much does that then impact, do we then take a different approach if we've got a particularly young person that has, maybe ADHD or some kind of version of part of autism or something? What should we be doing around that area, I guess?
Yeah, it's another thing that studies show us that since the arrivals of smartphones and social media, more people have the symptoms of ADHD. So it's obviously it's hard to know. ADHD is something, but it's also got symptoms. And because of the constant connection to technology, the constant shifting of, okay, social media, and you're constantly going from one thing to another thing to another thing, and your brain's not resting, it's constant stimulation. And that probably the biggest thing we see in Gen Z and Gen Alpha that's different is the concentration. And that is a side effect of smartphones and social media, where they only know stimulation. They don't know the times where it's okay, how can I focus on one thing? So one activity we do, there's a couple of things I speak about in the book, for concentration training. So again, this is nothing where it's going to be sitting down in a classroom. It's something you can do on the field. So one is simply a 30-second challenge. So this 30-second challenge, if you've got the resources for every player to have one ball, great, but it's not vital. So all you do could be part of your ball mastery session, just dribbling around in the area, and they've got to count in their head 30 seconds. When they think 30 seconds is over, they do toe taps or some kind of action. Could be step overs, whatever. And then obviously the coach has then cut the got a stopwatch and doing the real 30 seconds. So the competition is who can be the closest to 30 seconds. And what that does is, well, think about when's the last time they concentrated on one thing for 30 seconds? It doesn't happen so often. And again, studies show us that attention spans have dropped since the introduction of smartphones from, I think it's something like 12 seconds to 8 seconds. So you're giving them 30 seconds. And what they're having to do in that scenario is they catch their thoughts. There is possible that their thoughts start to wander, but they catch it and say, oh, no, I've got to come back to the seconds now. Which is effectively a mindfulness meditation, but you're just bringing it into a football environment. And obviously, simple as you can do it with, you can do it as a warm up with no balls, where they can run around when you think 30 seconds is over, start doing star jumps, whatever it may be. And then the second one is Life Kinetics, which is more of a coordination. So it's actually a German company, but Jurgen Klopp was big on it. Thomas Tuchel uses it with the England team. And this could be something as simple as you're passing the ball and you're also throwing up a tennis ball and catching it at the same time. So that concentration of doing two and the coordination of doing two things at once increases the focus element. And it's also been shown to reduce Alzheimer's, reduce symptoms of ADHD as well.
Love it.
Phil, in our first lesson, so as I said at the beginning, Phil and I are running a short course. We've got three lessons over 3 weeks that are pre-recorded. So anyone who picks up the course, you can watch them all in your own time. And our fourth lesson is a Q&A. And one of the things I sort of kept back for the Q&A, and I've been wrestling with it ever since we recorded it, was you had said that you had there was some material coming out of Ajax where they were going with this lack of concentration, whereas it didn't sit quite comfortably with you because you still want coaching to increase concentration. I don't know if I'm asking this question in the right way, but there's this whole argument. Do you bend completely with say their struggles with concentration, or do you double down on it and actually go, well, no, I'm going to push back against this turning ship? Where can we talk about that a little bit more? Because I still don't know where to land on it.
So for context, in 2017, I did a study visit to Ajax and a few other PSV, AZ Alkmaar. And Ajax were telling us this in 2017 that the concentration's dropping, so they're changing activities more often. And I think, again, it goes back to embrace the grayness of it. Sometimes, yes, absolutely. I think it's great. Keep them active, keep them getting as many touches. But I think there's also a case for every now and then. Let them wait. Let them have to be patient. Let them have to stick with something for a while. So if you're doing a switching play session and it's not coming off, instead of just changing it straight away because they're not getting success with it, they get bored or it's too easy, finding a way, okay, to again support them. Okay, let's try this. So always give them the first 2 minutes to work out any new activity, and then after that, we might jump in. But I think again, it's a case of instead of one or the other, it's there's sometimes going to be time for constant stimulation and change, but then there's also going to be a chance for, okay, let's say you want a kid wants to work on their step overs and they're still at level one. Okay, you're going to have to stick with, if you want to improve at that, you're going to have to stick with this for a while. It's not just going to come in after a few minutes. So yeah, I mean that's what I see. And I know I'm a big part of my philosophy is there's no one right answer. It's going to be sometimes this is the right answer and sometimes this is the right answer.
Could I ask a question, Scott? I'm going to ask you a question as well, mate. I'm sorry, this is a
That's
little bit
not part of the rules.
impromptu.
Hold on a minute.
I would, if you were to put a, if you were to get your kids at training, so they turn up at whatever 7 p.m., and you've got, I don't know, an hour, or an hour and a half, or whatever you've got with your group. If you were to say to them, you've got 10 players, you've got 14 players. Right, tonight we're going to play five versus five. You five against you five. Here's the ball. Go play. And I'll ask Phil this as well, and just I might even ask the wider my wider following as well. Do you think your players could play uninterrupted for 60 to 90 minutes in a 5v5 or a 7v7?
That is a great question. I think they'd love it at first. And we do a fair bit of free pay. I mean, I like Phil's idea about giving one ball at the beginning. And we always get ball out for everyone, but actually just organise a game more for yourself, just to go and do it. But I think they would. My gut feeling is, and I could be completely wrong here, it's putting the coach goggles on here in the way I don't have enough of an open mind. I'd be thinking they'll be right about 20 minutes, 25, and then they'll need some support around that. They'll need someone to come in and help. They'll get a bit bored. One or so, they'll be good. They're not going to cross any lines. But I think I don't know that they'd be able to go for longer than 25 minutes or so until they would want something else to someone either change the game themselves or they'd want someone to come and help them a little bit. But I could be completely wrong. Phil probably said that's just Scott having coach goggles on and not trusting the
No, no,
kids.
it's
I'm conditioned.
a great question. I agree. I'm not 100% sure of the answer. It'd be an interesting challenge for a coach over there. I mean, the school I work at on the last, like, with the last session before term, we always give them free play, and they tend to start with a match or something, but they don't tend to finish with it.
Interesting.
After that, they'll just do penalties or shooting or whatever it may be. But yeah, it's a really good question, Ray.
I do wonder, and there's not supposed to be a final answer, I guess, but I do wonder, and probably for quite a few years now, that we constantly need to condition games, we constantly need to add progressions, and we constantly need to, I've had kids ask me, is all we're going to do is play a game tonight? That kind of stuff. Maybe it's expectation that when they go to a coaching environment, that it's structures and flows from exercise to exercise. But just thinking about, I don't know, if the three of us, if we found seven other adults to go play for an hour, and we booked out a five-a-side for an hour, we'd play five versus five, and we'd play till the bitter end, no problem. So I don't know if that's a symptom of the kind of the Gen Z-ness of it all, or whether that's a symptom of the fact that we've coached them within the inch of their life, so they expect something different. But I'd love to actually offer that. I might actually offer that question out wider to my community and just see if anyone wants to try it and just see how
Maybe
long
it's a
it
bit of
lasts.
everything, Ray. Maybe it's a bit of all those things, isn't it? Because you're right. I mean, we grew up, we had four mates with the one ball over the field for 4 hours playing with four of you. You know what I mean? And you would do a bit of crossbar challenge, a bit of 2v2s, World Cup, but you would just keep playing games and you didn't really in it. Yeah, it'd be something worth trying. But I just wanted to make a couple of quick points. We've got to get let you go for in a second. So last couple of questions, that's okay. But first of all, just to recognise the points that you both made earlier on, and I think that's important to say. Look, this Gen Z and Gen Alpha, like, there's some really good characteristics. So I think they're knowledgeable because they watch a lot of stuff, so they know a lot of things. A lot of the players know a lot more of the professional players than I know these days, and the skills they do. Also, I think, and this is a credit to the world of education, I'm not always singing its praises, but I think, kids understand the importance, generally speaking, again, of learning and knowledge, and school environments, are particularly, probably better than they were, I would say, 25, 30 years ago, but, in how they embed knowledge for learners. So I think they come with some really good things there. And our challenge as coaches is to be able to pick on that good stuff, isn't it? As well as understand, maybe the concentration's not quite like there, and like it used to be for us, and maybe the conflict resolution's not quite as strong. But there's benefits there so we can maximise, and there's things there to be aware of. But I guess for my questions for you, and again, Ray, please feel free to jump in on this. But I'd like to fit almost to finish off. But if you had two or three top tips, and I'm putting you under pressure here, but two or three top tips, for a parent and or a coach, so they could be the same or could be different, like in this whole space about, how as a parent, how do you, what's the best thing you can do for your kid, that may be a Gen Z or Gen Alpha, and also, or just mindset more broadly, and also as a coach, what are the two or three top things, takeaways would you recommend the most if you've got two or three?
Yeah, so I think from a, I think the first thing for us as well as coaches is also to help the parents. I think limiting social media and smartphones, again, the book Anxiety Generation by Jonathan Haidt was revolutionary, and he was kind of mapped out the ages where it might be good to give them phones or let them be on social media. He kind of likens it to smoking, how before kids used to smoke and then there's no problem. Now the thought of that is mad, but he thinks that's how it's going to be in the future. We're going to look back at, okay, these 12, 13-year-olds were on social media. And Australia have just taken that on, actually. They've limited social media use to 16. So I think educating on that and seeing the benefits of that for parents. I think for coaches is the whole stretch and support. It's not one or the other, but both of them. Like I said, the pressure training, if you just put in that pressure training and don't give them any substance to it, for the majority of the players, it's not going to benefit. So helping them understand why you're doing it and how they can manage it. And I think it's just that, really. Be like you said there, with they've got a lot of benefits as well. This generation, like I said, you can really help them. Okay, have a look at this player and that video, and what did you notice in that game, or wherever it is, asking them questions and being curious about them, not being judgmental on the fact, oh, that Gen Z, but being curious, how can I help them, and asking them, how can I help you? You know, I think us being vulnerable in that way as well can really help.
Yeah, I look personally, I think it makes no sense to just sit around complaining, is there, about if we're talking about a whole, these are traits of a whole generation. I think you said 1995. I think in the course we talked about 90s, so late 90s right up till now. We're talking about a 30-year swing here. So we're not talking about a group of kids with a bad influence or something like that. So I think it's really important we don't just sort of dig our heels in and go, well, back in my day it was all better because we did this, so I'm going to hang on to that. I think it's really important that we pivot. I think old school values or old school's ideas around perseverance and things like that are I think they're generationless. But yeah, I would be more inclined to go with the tide and adapt your coaching where possible to where that tide is going. To me, from speaking of people like Phil and other people through the years, if you don't meet players where they are, then you don't move them. It's why would you? And that goes for adults as well. And by the way, I've seen plenty rooms of adults that are all on their phone, that are all scrolling tick in different.
Yeah,
It's true
true.
though.
Yeah,
You go
can't
to a,
concentrate. Yeah,
yeah, and and
not
you've
regularly
got
conflict.
on Zoom talking on a podcast, what's more
Yeah.
modern than that? But it is a really difficult thing to master, that sort of control of where you put your attention, and when that companies are making billions off keeping us in ChatGPT or in TikTok or in whatever it is. So it's yeah, it's really important. I think Phil said something really interesting early, and that's, we are in a space where they don't have their phones. I'm sure some kids have tried, but predominantly they don't have their phones, and then they are outside, when they're with us. So I think it's important we really try and move the needle with that respect.
Yeah, brilliant. Ray, Phil, thank you so much. We ask everyone this last question. Phil, Ray's done it a few times, but we ask everyone this question that comes on a podcast. So I'm going to pounce it on you, but there's no wrong answers to it. And it's about our last question, and we'll let you get away. If there was one thing you could change about the world of coaching, what might that be?
This day and age, the unstructured element, giving
Yep.
them more time where you're not watching them. So just a quick one. I know it's supposed to be a quick answer, but even just having, if you've got two matches going on, watching, reffing one game, but letting the other game be reffed by them, just allowing them to have that moment. Because they don't naturally do it. They don't have that we did before, where we could just go out on the street and
Taking
play
the
whenever
eyes
we
off them,
want.
right? Just take the eyes off a little bit and let them have
Exactly.
that space. Be there if they need you, but just don't have the eyes on them. Yeah.
Yeah,
Brilliant.
exactly.
Is that good? That's a good answer, right? We're happy that one. I mean, compared to some of the other ones, that's okay.
Yeah, I think so. Listen,
It's good.
I don't know what I answered to.
You've put that three or four times at least, so.
It's the thing that's at front of mind is probably what I answered in the past, though. But you're absolutely right, because we can't recreate the environment. We must remember as well, Scott, and I've been out to Africa and to certain parts of Asia and the developing world, where this conversation is bonkers to them.
Yeah.
It's so far removed from some environments where, the kids are playing on the beach and they are playing in the streets and barefoot and all that sort of stuff. So it would be an interesting conversation to take that conversation to coaches working in those environments as well.
Yeah, sure. And I guess
But
Latin
that's.
America, where the weather's nice and things like that, you think, like, is it the same problem in Brazil? I don't know, but did they? I mean, I'm sure there's similarities, but you think actually how much does climate affect this, right? Because the kids are in quite a lot in England because the weather's pretty crappy a lot of the time. So like, not an excuse, but if it was nice and sunny and they're outside and they got more things to do, maybe we've got to consider all these things, haven't we, as part of this discussion. Brilliant. Okay, well, look, Phil, thank you so much. If people want to find out more about you, Phil, get hold of the book or reach out. Is there any good ways of going about that through any kind of social media, ironically?
Yeah, ironically. So I mean, the book's on Amazon, Inspiring Young Minds, Mental Mastery for Youth Footballers. And yeah, to find me at Mindsight Sport on Instagram, and then Phil, then my name, Phil Filippo on LinkedIn, probably be the best way.
Brilliant. And we'll put all those links in the show notes so people can find it nice and easy. And then Ray, obviously you're busy still doing your stuff with the CPD sessions. I feel it's been part of those. What, anything you want to just share briefly about what's going on around that?
Look, the most immediate thing was is the work I'm doing with Phil. So on the 15th of Feb, so I don't know when exactly people will pick up this episode. 15th of Feb, we released lesson one of Coaching Gen Z short course. If this has intrigued you today, and I'm sure it will for many, if you can get in, I think there's going to be a little discount code put at the on the link as well, for anyone who's interested in that. But if you miss that kind of February 15th deadline, don't be afraid to give me a nudge, and we can, these courses roll on. So I've got loads of stuff going on, but most immediately, what I'm doing with Phil is quite exciting over the next month.
Brilliant. Well, I think it's a fascinating topic, Phil. I think it's something we are aware of. Like you say, it's not like this isn't a last week thing. This has been going for years and years. And we are aware of it. Anyone who coaches, kids recognize that, we have to understand and be empathetic towards it. So the more we've got people like you opening that conversation up and sharing ideas, the better for all of us, because the kids get a better journey, and then so do we, right? Because we enjoy the coaching more, even more. So thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it. And will you come on again at some point?
Yeah, please. No, thank you very much for having me on. It's been great fun.
Brilliant, top man. Thanks. So, how was the co-hosting, Ray? Was it all right?
Oh, it's difficult, isn't
Nah, you make it look so
it?
easy. You speak slower, clearer, and calmer than I do. So, look, the job's
Hey. Yeah.
yours. You've got it.
The Irish accent, I was told when I first came to England that you have to enunciate. So I started doing that about 20 years ago. So
Yeah. Have you seen episode of Friends where Ross has to do lecture and he puts on a fake accent? Have you ever seen that one?
Is that what you're doing?
I might have just started doing that and slow me down. I might get a fake accent. Guys, thank you so much for your time. It's great to see you both.
Thank you, babe.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Phil.
Cheers.
This episode was brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly. Established since 2006, Soccer Coach Weekly is a leading source of inspiration and advice for all grassroots coaches. Join thousands of youth soccer coaches just like you, saving time and effort in their goal of having the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode.